of course, there's another little thing that's also happening. Brett Worthington's with me for a look at the other big news stories of the week. And, oh, is there an election, Brett?
I don't know anything about it. I don't want to know anything about it.
Look, amazingly, one of the parties released an agriculture policy. Who would have thought?
Not the party you would have naturally been the first one to think about when you think about agriculture, but it was the Greens who stepped forward on Thursday and said that they want to put funding into rural research and development and land care. They're right at the heart of their policy, two areas that have had quite some substantial cuts in recent years. The Greens are saying they're going to push for $100 million over 4 years. And they want to create this new Centre for Sustainable Agriculture and then have 180 federally funded extension officers that could work right across the country to help roll out the research that you're seeing in the centre be implemented on farms. Rachel Seward is the Greens agricultural spokeswoman, and she hangs everything of their policy on the idea that research is vital for the future of Australian food production.
Unless we really seriously invest in sustainable agriculture and agriculture into the future and into research and development, we don't think we're going to be competitive or be able to keep up our agriculture to be at the cutting edge in the face of the ongoing impacts of climate change in this country.
It's very interesting to see that they've targeted land care and research and development, two areas, of course, that have been hit rather hard with budget cuts in recent years. Another issue that keeps bubbling away is the good old backpacker tax. I'm still confused.
Honestly, it depends on what hour of the day as opposed to what day of the week is as to what's going on. Essentially, what you saw happen was Kelly O'Dwyer got up earlier in the week and said that the government plan was to delay the backpacker tax. So this tax, the idea was that backpackers and working holiday makers wouldn't be able to claim the tax-free threshold as they currently do. So at the moment, they're taxed when they earn above about $18,000. The new plan was to have a tax of 32.5% rather, on every dollar they earn, and it was due to start in July. It's been gaining a lot of momentum, I guess, in recent months. Not so much attention at the time when this was announced. This is two budgets ago.
Oh, exactly.
That Joe Hockey announced it, and it kind of bubbled away for a little while and then really kicked up earlier this year. So this delay will mean that the government says it's going to review the policy. We did see a review from Richard Colbeck before, so there'll be a second
review. And I think that's due to report in October, is that right?
That's right. And so the delay suggests that if there was to be implementation and changes, that you would see it take from January 1 as opposed to July 1. There's been some within the Liberal Party that have said they feel that the tax has effectively been killed. But in terms of as you stand here today, that's not necessarily what's happening. And the NFF's Sarah McKinnon says that, look, they want it gone and gone yesterday, essentially. She says that really these workers are crucial for farmers in the medium term.
In the long term, what we're looking for is a dedicated agricultural work visa. And the reason that that's important is that at the moment, our overseas workforce, which is so important to agriculture, comes to Australia on a variety of visas. There's no backup plan for us, and we can't afford to lose overnight 38,000 workers a year.
And it's been interesting to watch Labor react to this conversation as well, because whilst they've said we're going to kill it quickly, there's no actual firm timeline on how quick that will be and how it will happen and whether it will have retrospective elements, because it's due to come into force on the weekend of the federal election.
And when you hear from the Treasurer speaking, I think one of the lines he said earlier in the week was, if you were in the federal budget lockup, you would have heard me suggest that there would be changes in this space before the financial year. To be honest, I'm not a constitutional expert. I don't actually know how this works if you make an announcement during the caretaker period as to if or not the tax will have to be collected for a couple of days or not, or what it will be. But it's safe to say this debate isn't going away anytime soon. It's one thing that's actually frustrating a lot of farms. If you look at the Victorian Farmers Federation, they say that there was a review. They provided feedback on the review, and they're bemused as to why there's another review now going to take place. Emma Germano is from Gippsland, and she's the horticultural president of that lobby group.
Farmers don't farm based on whether or not it's an election year. We put in our crops every year, so we're not really interested in the politics of it all and which party said what. We just need strong commitment to making sure that we've got a workforce.
So what are the other options? I mean, is the concern that those tens of thousands of workers will just go somewhere else?
The farm lobby groups have said this is their biggest fear, which is why the tourism sector has also stepped into this space. They feel you reports from hostels that you're seeing a drop down in the number of people booking to come and stay in these areas where they would be working. One of the proposals that was put forward was a 19% tax rate. The Nationals backbencher, Andrew Broad, was one of the people within the government that's been advocating for this point. It's one that the National Farmers Federation put forward. That idea was put to Scottish traveller George Salisbury, and he says that he thinks that that seems like a decent compromise and he would stay if that was the case.
I mean, it would be nice if it was scrapped altogether, but I wouldn't expect them to because, you know, at the end of the day, like, the Australian government's got to make its money somehow. Everyone gets taxed at some rate or another. So I think the 19, I think that would be reasonable. That's a bit more than you get taxed back home, but, you know, you've got to experience of working abroad, so you've got to take some leeway with that. So I would be all right with that.
One of the criticisms, I guess, Edwina, with this space was that the government was talked about how much money they would raise by this change, but then a lot of ag sectors said, well, we're not expecting you'll be having that many people coming in here. So they really questioned the amount that the government would raise from the tax hike.
That's right, and the unquantifiable benefit of having people there to pick the crop and add to the GDP of agriculture in the first place.
Well, exactly, and particularly when they say they can't find enough domestic workers to pick these crops as it
indeed.
Is.
Indeed. What was it, 100,000 worker shortage the NFF put about a couple of years ago. So, yes, and more fun to be had, no doubt, in the next few weeks. Now, there's something going on in the supermarket. I was having a bit of a shop the other day and my children are obsessed with poached eggs. I normally buy free range, but I noticed a big empty space on some shelves.
Well, I had the same experience, and I granted my head has been stuck in the dairy crisis, so I wasn't quite sure if I'd missed some global shortage that was happening. You walk in and you just see these empty shelves, and I was in Coles and it had signs with apologies and saying, look, we're sorry with what's going on. They're saying that there's been a shortage of supply. One of the things that happened is that the egg industry says you do see a bit of a drop-off around this time of the year, this autumn through winter period. You get a bit of a production drop-down in free range, typically not so much for caged eggs. But it's something that shoppers are being urged to get used to because in the next few years, as we continue to see more and more free range eggs and a reduction in caged eggs, you might see this fluctuation in terms of supply coming on. And Bede Burke, he's from the New South Wales, he's a representative from New South Wales on the Egg Farmers of Australia. And he says essentially you're going to see more and more of this because there hasn't been any level of investment in the caged egg system.
We haven't had any more investment in new cages since about 2010, so we've had 6-year void. And the cage production sector is still about 55% of our industry. So to have more than half of your industry not growing, it's a real concern.
You're seeing people, I guess, move. One of the issues they were saying is, so you've had all the people buying a lot of the free-range eggs and then now they're buying the caged option because that's the only one that they've got there, which is why you're seeing these vacant shelves everywhere. Although I think he did go on to say that only about, I think it was 50% of eggs are sold in supermarkets. There are obviously other outlets for people to get them from. But when you've got major fast food chains saying they want to phase out caged eggs as well, you will see this more reliance and more competition to get a free-range egg.
Yes, it's very interesting. There's been a bit of discussion about what role barn-laid eggs should play in all of this in terms of trying to keep supply relatively steady. And anyone with backyard chooks would know that there's a bit of a drop-off over autumn and winter. It's not quite as much fun laying when it's freezing cold outside, is it?
And might I say, a black market opportunity now. If you've got a card table and some chooks, I'd be setting them up out the front.
Don't suggest
$10
like that,
a dozen.
Now, we have talked ad nauseum about the ongoing milk crisis and the various tangents that have been a result of that. But one of the, significant moves this week was when one of the major supermarkets weighed into the whole discussion, pitching itself as the saviour of dairy farmers.
I really wonder if it expected what happened next to
possibly
happen.
Possibly not.
So you had Coles step into this space and say, we're going to launch a new milk brand, we're going to take 20 cents per litre that comes from this milk and we're going to put it into a fund to support Murray Gold and suppliers. You've seen a similar process in South Australia some years ago now. They produced the SADA fresh milk range, which you see a whole range of milk products with that branding. And I think it raises about $200,000 a year. So we're not talking about lots and lots of money, but Coles stepped forward and the managing director, John Durkin, says that it was about putting another option there in front of consumers if they felt that they wanted to do more to support the dairy farmers.
So this is about choice. It's offering customers choice. So customers can choose to pay a dollar a litre for Coles brand milk, or they can choose to pay a slightly higher price, knowing that an extra 20 cents will go back to farmers.
So, Brett, I have to confess, when I saw this earlier this week, I did get somewhat cranky and have a little rant that, hang on a minute, the milk that's in the container in the supermarket is not the product that farmers are producing to Murray Goulburn that is the processor that's cut the prices. So what is going on?
So this is the trouble. So Victoria is where the large issue is at the moment. You've got about 2,600 dairy farmers with Murray Goulburn that supply the company just in Victoria. But only about 6-7% of that goes into fresh milk that you would buy in the supermarket shelves. So I think that where this debate has been interesting now is that it's pivoted into this one about the major supermarkets to blame for the dollar a litre milk prices that you've seen in recent years. And now the issue has moved. And so now instead of talking about Murray Goulburn, the company which has a corporate regulator investigating into it, you've got the consumer watchdog investigating Murray Goulburn and Fonterra for the actions that they had. But now the debate's moved to the retailers. And I think, personally, it's probably missing the point of what the questions are that still need to be answered in this whole fiasco.
Yes.
Because even if people had bought thousands more litres of milk each, it would have done nothing to prevent.
Would have made absolutely no difference to those farmers supplying Murray Goulburn or Fonterra or the price those companies could offer.
That's right. And so the question that's becoming with of these processes is, when did they know that they weren't able to maintain their prices? The big shock has been because in April you've announced a retrospective price step down. You've got 2 months of the financial year to go. But on global markets, you've seen a massive oversupply of dairy. As we've said, week after week, you've seen Russian import bans. You've seen quotas in Europe disappear.
Declines in the market to China.
And you've got Canadian farmers that are propped up by their own government in this space and cuts in New Zealand. How Australia thought it would be immune from the cuts you're seeing on global markets is amazing. And yet that's not where the debate has gone at all.
No.
It's now being distracted by this fresh milk debate that you're seeing at the moment.
It's gone to the populist end. So how are the farming groups reacting? Because they kind of have to play a careful hand here.
Exactly. So the Victorian Farmers Federation was actually pushing for this idea with Coles. So the President, Peter Toohey, says that, look, it's not going to do wonders, but any step you can have in the right direction is obviously welcome. He says that Melbourne obviously has... Well, look, I think it's best if he says it because he sums it up quite nicely.
You just have to go to Melbourne and the cappuccinos and lattes all require milk. So if we can get all those shoppers, all those coffee drinkers to use the Farmer brand to support Australian farmers, it would make a huge difference. And I would think it would return a lot of money, which would help support our dairy industry.
I love the use of the latte economy.
Yes.
Like when you work, when I used to work
Dennis
in Horsham.
Dennis Nathfine has a lot to answer for. Can I just say that?
Those cafe latte sipping
yes.
cityites was the expression you would hear all the time. Not to
yes.
mention that every trader in a regional area probably gets a latte on his way to work
the
anyway.
The latte, that's right. That's right. Hi-Vis is not immune to the lure of the latte. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.
More on those stories online at abc.net.au/rural.